still can't find one. But anyway, Russell's been doing such a great job, and I just love having him here and listening to him. And he's going to do step 11 tonight.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. You know, in California, they say, are there any other alcoholics in the room? They all yell, yeah, or something like that. It's a California thing. Can you all hear me over there in the booth? Can you hear me? No? You're not missing anything. This isn't going to be that good. I know. It's okay. Well, you want to go past me, right? And I flick the switches.
Still not.
Nothing's happening. It's get the electrician. Sorry, guys. I guess you can come into this room, but this is the best we're gonna do. Turn it up. Okay. In any event, hey, it's good to be here. I love this room. The last time I was here, I'm really happy because the last time I was here, I think some lady fainted and had to be taken away by emergency. So at least nobody's fainted this time. You know, I sort of mellowed down my message a little bit. You know, there's actually, I don't like doing that, watering down the message. You know, there was, and I go from here. To the, I guess it's right down the street. I'm not sure. I'm all the way down from South Miami. I'm like a few miles above Cuba. And but I think after I do the 12-step here, I'm going to be doing it at the 12-step room. Which house? 12-step house, which I go every year do it over there. And that's a great place too. And so I look forward to that. But I really enjoyed coming up here and talking to y'all, and it gives me an opportunity to share a few things I've learned in the little over 31 years I've been involved in this program and sober. And I love giving it away. And it's great to have a feeling. I was talking to somebody about this last night. I'm not even sure I was talking about it in an AA context. I was just talking about it in a spiritual context. Because after 31 years, you know, I'm a member of AA. I'd like to think of good standing. And I'm a member of the Fellowship of the Spirit, which is a subset of AA, and I'm a member of my church. I belonged, what better thing for a Jewish kid from New York to do than join the Presbyterian Church? So I'm a member of a church, and you got to watch out. Yeah, I know you're laughing. You know, you never know where you're going to be 31 years from now when this program gets a hold of you. You know, so you never know where this thing's going to take you. And I'm a member of a lot of, and you don't have to have a white chip or a green chip or even a medallion in your pocket to be a buddy of mine, to be a friend of mine. I mean, somebody I hang out with, because what I found is that Alcoholics Anonymous does not necessarily have the corner on the market of righteousness and wanting to get closer to God, and there are other people out there, and there's it's kind of exciting. You know, when you first come in here, you sort of think that I had my nice little AA coffin. You know, it was us and the Earth people. You know, the Earth people are there, people out there that don't understand us, you know, as if we even understand us. And I went on AA cruises and to AA rooms and to AA parties, and everything was AA. But, you know, this is more or less a launching pad. This isn't a coffin, at least not the way I see it. You know, it says we're going to experience much of heaven, be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. You know, and the big book talks about joining a church or a synagogue and getting more, you know, listen, I've done the alcoholism thing, sitting alone in my room with my phonograph playing LP records. Does anybody remember LP records? Am I the only one? I'm 63. I've been married 31 years, you know, 4 kids and 6 grandkids, and I even remember when Carter was president, you know, and anybody remember that? Some of you guys don't even remember that. He was speaking the other night. I said, man, I wonder if there's anybody who actually remembers that deal. Standing on line with gas. Hey, then you need to recall what was going on then. It was an interesting time. But let's not get political, okay? Okay, but in any event, I don't want to get too political. Let's just get religious, okay? Let's get into something else we can fight over, okay? And there was, you know, I was talking to a guy that I talked to in California and who's like into a lot of the stuff I'm into, you know, between, you know, AA, as we all know, and a lot of you guys have been with me for the last 10 weeks, and you know, AA, the history of AA is it started in 1935, and the book was written, the textbook, the basic text that we use, written in 1939, and one of the things they say in the basic text that we read all the time is, we read it here today, rarely have we seen a person fail, or slowly followed our path. And between 1935 and 1939, if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, what their path was to read the good book or the Holy Bible and things that had to do with that. And the three parts of that book that they found absolutely essential was 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, and the book of James. We were almost called the James Gang, named after the book of James, and the Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And incredible books. As a matter of fact, when I came in here, one of the things I was handed first off was Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount. But later on, I got into more stuff. You know, I wanted to expand my deal, and I got into more stuff. And I'm gonna, and I think one of the best things for me to do in talking about the 11th step is maybe to a certain extent sort of tell you a little bit about my journey and what happened to me. And so I think I'll share a little bit about my story in terms of 11 steps stuff, because it's been a remarkable situation. I as you know, I sponsor a lot of people. I've sponsored a lot of people. I mean, I have never counted them. They never told me I had to, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds. And I'm also quite sure that I've seen many, 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 many people who I've sponsored and other people slip and slide in Alcoholics Anonymous after 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years sobriety. I'm quite sure, that I know many people, and I've sponsored many men in Alcoholics Anonymous who have 20, 25 years who are miserable. They won't look miserable. They won't. You can't tell they're miserable at AA meetings. You know, they'll use words like "I'm hanging in there," or, you know, other things that'll give it away. And you know, if they ever come to the point where you end up sponsoring them, they'll talk to you about what's going on in their life, and it's not a pretty thing. But they're not drinking. They may be suicidal. They may be homicidal. They may hate themselves and the world around them. They may hate everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm going to tell you something. They'll give them a medallion, because it's all about the drinking here. It's all about the drinking or the not drinking. I haven't had a drink in 20 years, and I'm going to kill somebody, you know? One more flipping day at a time. And, of course, the way I experience, and you know, we all experience, life is about experiencing problems and experiencing troubles, and nobody gets past that deal. And I got to tell you something, for a long period of time, and it's important to go through that stuff. You know, you don't learn how to stay sober and act to good measure bored unless you get to be bored. And you don't get to act to good measure and feel good about yourself and be sober and somehow not drink anyway when you're broke unless you're broke. You know, you don't learn how to do this thing. You don't know how to live your life as an incredible human being and helping people and feeling good about yourself broke unless you are broke. You understand that, don't you? You know? I mean, you don't really get to learn how to live your life to good purpose and help people, regardless of the circumstances, even if you have cancer, unless you have cancer. You know, you don't get to do this stuff and learn how to live life in a decent way and help other people and feel good about yourself and good about life. You know, even after maybe your son dies or your daughter dies or your business goes under, unless your son dies, your daughter dies, or your business goes under. I mean, you know, it'd be great if you could act like in this alcoholic, you know, Disney world where, you know, you're going to be okay as long as everything in your life is okay. As long as you never get the red lights and, you know, the boss always likes you and you always have money in the bank. As long as you're okay, it's okay. But, you know, the problem with that is that's probably not the way life is going to work out. You know, life is just like that. It throws you all sorts of bumps and curves and stuff like that. So, you know, what I'd like to do is I'd like to not only stay sober, physically sober, but I'd like to, like I talk about, emotional sobriety and spiritual sobriety. I'd like to feel good about myself and my God and the people around me and act good measure, no matter what the circumstances of my life are, you know? And you know something? I think when you, I think when you feel good about yourself, you know, this is my theory, and this is not only a theory because I've proven it. I think when you feel good about yourself and you're good about the people around you and you're grateful for all things, even if you have a really bad situation happen, in other words, when even bad things end up in your mind being good, when everything works to good measure, it's very hard to have a bad day. And then you don't have to say things like, I'm hanging in there, because it's all wonderful. It's all good. And I got to tell you something. I went through 20 years of road testing. I went through the AA boot camp for 20 years thinking it was never going to be okay. Like I was in hand-to-hand combat with the stuff in this world that's going on out there. You know, like we all do, running to an AA meeting because I need a meeting. Call my sponsor because I need to talk to my sponsor. You know, running around at 3 o'clock in the morning looking at the big buck and doing all sorts of things and thinking and all that stuff because I was going crazy, you know. And I've done that deal. And I thought after 9 years, and I took a pretty good hit with this thing. I mean, I sponsored a lot of people. I did all the service stuff you're supposed to do here. Did the intergroup banquet twice. I did all the stuff. I was stark raving sober. And, you know, I was still doing hand-to-hand combat with the planet Earth. You know, apparently, I thought I could get 30 years sobriety in like 3 weeks, but apparently it don't work that way. You got to spend some time in the oven. You know, it's like the Israelites when they came out of Egypt, when they came out of bondage, God said, I'm going to send you to the promised land. It's going to be milk and honey. It was only like a 3 week walk, you know? I don't know how much you know about the biblical stuff. It took them 40 years. 40 years in the desert, being beaten down. But you want to know something? Everybody that went into the promised land after 40 years, out of millions of people, there were only two that went into the promised land that were alive, that had that slave mentality that came out of Egypt, because they all died in the desert after 40 years. And the cats that went into the promised land for the milk and honey, let me tell you something, they were going to rip your eyes out, because these were the guys that were born in the desert as free men. And they were struggling through life. They went through the boot camp, you know, that Marine boot camp, and they were just ready to rip, rape, and run. You know what I mean? They were ready to do that deal. And they, you know, they had hardcore stuff going on. And in here, we do our 40 years. You know, we do our deal. And it could be, it's like the cops say, you know, I do a lot of criminal law. It's like, hey, listen, you can do it the hard way or the easy way. You can do, you know, there's hard time and then there's easy time. There's like, you know, you can sit in jail and be the worst situation in the world, and you can be in jail, it can be bad, and not that bad. It all depends upon your attitude. You know, one of the things I found when I got in here is, like it says, like I didn't know what alcohol, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is a little bit of a recap because I had an alcohol problem. You know, I mean, that's what I thought the problem, it was an alcohol problem, it developed into an alcohol problem when you're sitting alone in your home with your LP record, and, you know, I used to think I was... You know, I was a bar drinker, you know, sitting in the bars, drinking with people and everything like that, having a lot of fun. And you know, I ended up in my living room listening to the same cut on a LP record. I don't know what Pirate Looks at 40 or Running on Empty or I'm Mr. Blue or Rainy Days and Mondays. It, you know, that was like the female side of me. I'd get into Rainy Days and Mondays. You know, it's, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, and the Carpenters, you know. Does anybody know what the Carpenters are, you know? I mean, you might as well, you know, you start listening to the Carpenters, you might as well blow your brains out. All over the line. You better be drinking, I'll tell you that. You know, so, and I would sit by the LP record, and I would, I was like 30 years old, I was, you know, and I had a wife. I had a beautiful child. I had a beautiful house on Miami Beach on the golf course. I had a great job. I had everything. I had everything going for me that was supposed to make me happy. And I flushed the entire thing down the toilet. And, you know, that's only talking about me. Like, look what I lost. But forget about me flushing the entire things down the toilet. I scarred my son for life. I scarred my wife, a gal who loved me, for life. I scarred her parents for life. I hurt a lot of people. Of course, when I want to talk, since I'm an alcoholic, I want to say, look what I did to myself. But I was the guilty one. why don't we talk about what I did to all the innocent people around me because I was worshiping me? Because alcoholics, I didn't know that I was worshiping me. I thought I was the nicest guy in the world. But I learned after coming in here that what my real problem was is that I thought I was God, that I was worshiping me. Now, we don't realize that we're God. We don't say, well, maybe we do. Some of us say, well, I'm the greatest. Well, I'm the best. Or you don't know who you're screwing with. Do they know who I'm dealing with? You don't know who I am. Who do you think you're talking to? Why is this happening to me? I can't believe this. I don't deserve this. I'm entitled to that. I mean, we do think we're God. We don't realize that. But, you know, we worship ourselves. That's what the book says. You know, the book initially says, I listened to the same cut over, and I put it back. And you know what that is with an LP? If I only had CDs, if I was only drinking when there were CDs, man, that would have been. But I had to wake up and put it back in the same cut. I mean, how many times, you know, now I have to, you know, running on empty. And then I picture myself, I'd make believe that I was singing this song. And then I'd think about all the girls that were watching me singing that song. And then, yeah, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like. And then I would think about my funeral and, you know, I was lying there dead, and I was really behind the tree, but they thought I was dead. I was thinking about all those beautiful girls gathered around the casket, you know, thinking about how wonderful I was and how they hurt me so badly and everything like that. And I was a 30-year-old trial attorney. I wasn't doing so well. This is a serious disease, and I was drinking a lot, and I couldn't stop drinking. I'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to drink today, and by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd be drinking. I'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to buy booze today. By 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm, you know, putting together dimes, nickels, and quarters to buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti so I could sit by the LP record and drink. I couldn't stop drinking. After a while, I just gave up. I say, I ain't never going to stop drinking. I couldn't envision a life without drinking. And then about the time that the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards, because, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you have an incredible way of rationalizing your situation. No matter how bad it gets, you're really not that bad. And I'll tell you something. If you're an alcoholic and you manage to get yourself a good-looking gal, I'm talking about guys. I don't know anything about girls. But let me tell you something, guys. If you can trap some good-looking gal into adoring you, it's amazing how much you can drink and how many people you hurt, and you can go on in your life. All you need is one of them pretty ones, you know what I mean, to say that she loves you, and you can think you're the greatest thing in the world no matter what, because look at this gal I got. You know, it's amazing. Look at the money I have. Look at my bank account. Look at my car. It's amazing how you can prop up your ego, even though you're the loneliest, you know, meanest, most sorrowful son of a gun on the planet Earth, if you could just look at a few things. Like a bank account or a girl or something like that. What a miserable human being. You can tell how much you can tell yourself you're such a nice guy, even though you don't even believe it. You understand? If you just have a few things. And so, you know, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous finally crawling, and I'll tell you, the humblest part I ever had in my life, and this is absolutely the truth, and I know I'm not the only one who believes this, is the day I picked up a white chip. I'm in a room. I mean, here I am, I'm a 31-year-old trial attorney, a former division chief in the state's attorney's office, former National Science Foundation fellow, all sorts of degrees and everything on my wall, and I'm in a room like this, and nobody really knows me, and I don't know anybody, and I'm 31 years old, and used to be hip, slick, and cool, and I'm sitting in the back of the room, and they pick up that white chip, and they say, does anybody want a white chip? And I can't even remember a thought going through my mind. I just walked. You know, basically, when you pick up a white chip, you're sort of announcing to everybody like you're new. I mean, who wants to say that? I want to tell everybody, like, I'm a know-it-all. I know, you know, and I walk from the back of the room to the front of the room in front of these people, and of course they all applauded, and I picked up my white chip, and I went to sit down, and I knew absolutely nothing. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That was the best. That the attitude I had when I picked up that chip was probably the humblest I've ever been in my entire life, and it was the best, not only feeling, but it was the best I've been in the last 31 years. And it's been all downhill from there. In a sense, because after about a day or two or a week or three or four, all of a sudden the thinking came back, because I came in here, I had two neurons working, they were waving goodbye at each other, you know, I couldn't even carry it. All of a sudden the thinking came back, you know, the people patting me on the back, you're doing great, came back. I started feeling better about myself, you know, and all of a sudden the ego, that alcoholic ego starts coming back. You know, who are you talking to? Who do you think you're talking to? You don't know who you're talking to. You know, all of a sudden the alcoholic defiance comes back. And as much as I want to do this thing, it's just like I'm hair-triggered, right-handed, made to just be an alcoholic, to think alcoholically. And it says our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And what I didn't, it says in the book, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And that was me. I drank, I didn't realize this. I thought I drank because everybody else drank. I thought I drank, who knows why, you know, I thought everybody drank. I drank because I hated being sober. I was uncomfortable. I didn't know I was uncomfortable, so I would have never admitted uncomfortable. So all I know is that everyone's why I needed a flipping drink. You know, I thought I liked people. I liked people. My only problem was whenever I was with them, I had to have a drink. You know, because I felt funny being around them if I wasn't drinking. You know, I mean, I like playing golf as long as somebody was bringing the booze. You know, we'd go fishing. We'd go fish. Yeah, who's bringing the booze? I used to think I was a fisherman. I wasn't a fisherman. I was a drinker that would drink sometimes when I was fishing. I used to think, listen, if somebody said to me, you want to play golf? I'd say, sure, I have to play golf. Who's bringing the booze? There ain't going to be no booze. I don't feel like playing golf today. I used to think I was a golfer. No, I was a drinker. Every once in a while, I'd be playing golf while I was drinking. You know, with me, it was all about the booze. It was all about the booze because no matter what I was doing, I was uncomfortable unless I was drinking. It's hard to explain to a non-alcoholic what it's like to live in this world no matter what's going on, no matter how much money you have, when you can't stand yourself and you're uncomfortable in your skin, because whatever insulation God gives normal people to cope with the horse shit that's going out there, I just didn't get it, okay? And somehow I'm always comparing my insides with other people's outsides, and I'm just not good enough, okay? I'm just not measuring up. And so I got one thing going, I'm the greatest thing in the world, I'm better than anybody, I deserve anything, and I got another thing going on saying I'm a piece of crap, and that works out some sort of friction, I don't understand that, which really, it all comes together and works perfect if you drink a lot of scotch. That's all I know. Scotch helped, but after a while it turned on me. And then I come in here and I learn after I stop drinking. I thought the problem was alcohol, because when you can't stop drinking over a period of time, things start happening to you. You start getting divorced, you start getting arrested, you get DUIs, you know. They don't arrest you for driving while being an idiot, or driving while being angry, or driving while being lustful, or driving while envying, or driving while being... They arrest you for driving while drinking, so you think drinking's the problem. So you come in here, you put the plug in the jug, you stop drinking, you think everything's going to be wonderful, and within a week or 2 weeks, you know, you're going nuts. You feel good initially, and then you're going nuts. And then, after a few months, you start realizing why you drank. You drank because you can't stand being sober. And it says in the book, it says people drink because they're not happy with their sobriety. You know, and how can you be happy with your cigars? I was 30 years on this planet before I stopped drinking, and I was never happy sober. I'd have spurts of happiness or stuff like that as long as I would get things or have things or things were going my way. As soon as things didn't go my way, which happens almost all the time, it's very hard to have things not go your way, you know, have things go your way all the time, I was miserable or I was feeling sorry. I was a self-pityaholic. Listen, I could write the book on, I have a PhD in feeling sorry for myself and not thinking about anybody else. And then I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I learn a little bit more about this dis-ease. And they tell me things, and this is what they tell me about the disease. It says I'm selfish and self-centered. Can you imagine that? What kind of horseshit is that? I'm the nicest guy in the world. You know, just don't get in my way. You know, I'm selfish and self-centered. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. I step on the toes of others, they retaliate. Usually I don't understand why it's going on because I don't think it's my fault. And then alcohol is an extreme example of self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Usually thinks he's a victim while he's victimizing everybody else. Above everything, we must get rid of self. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. God makes that possible. And I don't understand what they're talking about because I've been drinking all my life down at the bars and they never talk about God. Nobody's ever talked, as a matter of fact, the only thing we talk about God is we laugh at people that talk about God. We laugh at people that do that stuff. Those are uncool people. And God knows if you're an alcoholic, the last thing you want to be is uncool. You want to be cool. I mean, I strive to be cool. You know, I am the Brad Pitt of the bar. You know what I mean? Brad Pitt doesn't believe in God. All those cool Hollywood stars, they don't believe in God. You know, I've been watching TV and everything. They laugh at people who believe in God. And now you're telling me I got to come in here, I got to believe in, hey, I don't think so. You know, let's talk about designer shirts, you know, Rolex watches. Let's talk about Mercedes. Let's talk about the stuff that's real important that I've been chasing after that I know the world applauds. I'm not going to talk about this God stuff. What do you mean? People are going to laugh at me. And if you're an alcoholic and you feel crappy about yourself anyway, the last thing you want is people laughing at you because you have no self-esteem and no self-respect anyway. So even though you're saying you don't care what other people think about you, all you do is sit around worrying about what other people think about you. You know, because, you know, that's what alcoholics do. They worry about, you know, what are they going to think about me? What do they think about me? Why do I do this? What are they talking about? And they have that other paranoia, that alcoholic paranoia, that they think other people are actually thinking about them. When they're not, they're just thinking about themselves. And so it says to me, I read this book. It's kind of hard to believe it. It says, I'm selfish and self-centered. Above everything, we must get rid of selfishness. We must sort of kills us. And it throws in this God thing. And then the book says, and here's the problem. God is the only thing that's going to be your answer. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come past you who countless others. There is one that has all power. That one is God. They throw in the God thing, which wasn't invented by Alcoholics Anonymous. It was in the Holy Bible that they're reading. It's been going on for thousands of years. Even Dr. Jung says, remember Dr. Jung? With Roland Howard, he says, this has been going on for thousands of years. He says, here and there, once in a while, these things happen. We call them phenomena. In the Bible, they call them miracles. It says, ideas and emotions, which are the driving forces of these men's lives, are pushed over to the side, and they're somehow converted. They become new creations, and they're dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. I've been trying to do this with you psychologically, but I have never been able. It's in the book. I have never been able. Dr. Jung, the greatest psychiatrist, I have never been able to work this sort of miracle, this phenomena, with a person like you, an alcoholic. You've got to find a spiritual solution. You've got to find God. And then they write this book. They've got the Bible. They got this book. And it's all about finding God. And here's the problem. You don't want to hear that deal. You want a pill. 10 years sober. You're 10 years sober. You're not feeling well and you're looking for a pill. You want a girl. You want a man. You want a woman. You want a car. You want a house. You want something material that'll solve your problem, and nothing material will solve your problem, because like they said in Sermon on the Mount, which is one of the books they read, he says, don't put your faith in things that rust, because that stuff will be taken away. Don't build your life around your business. Don't build your life around your wife or your husband or any of that stuff, because that stuff will be taken away or threatened. You'll be worried about your stuff. Build your life around things that can never be taken away from you. It says only God. That's what it says. It says, God, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. To the extent that you understand that, you accept that, and even if it doesn't make any sense to you, you say, I'm going to go for that deal. To that extent, you're going to have an incredibly glorious life after you have the shit knocked out of you. To the extent that you don't accept that and you fight this thing, it's going to be hanging in there for a long period of time, ultimately drinking, but if not drinking, just living a life of quiet desperation. And that's the bottom line. And some people are going to, and you know, it's like it says in the Bible, it says there's the narrow way and there's the broad highway. And many find the broad highway and only a few find the narrow way. The way my sponsor put it to me, he says, many are called but few are chosen. And so we got a lot of people lined up along that door that says the not drinking door, and they're picking up medallions and everything like that, and getting into horrible relationships and having horrible lives and just sort of hanging in there, going to meetings. And then you got other people, you meet them every once in a while, they just seem to be so comfortable in their own skin. They seem to be playing a different, it's like the game of golf. You know, I play golf and Tiger Woods play golf, but Tiger's playing a different game than I'm playing. And there are some people playing this AA game and they've just gone into a different area and they're playing a different game. It's like an Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. It says right here, it says, I love the way he puts it, because we're all like twins. You know, I came in here thinking we're all unique, we're all different. Well, you don't understand me. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems, you know. I mean, I can understand why you think, looking at me, you think I have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. And pretty soon my problems are going to go away. So thank you very much, and I won't have to drink so much. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. I drink exactly the amount of booze I need to solve my problems. So thank you very much, and why don't you go mind your own business and go screw yourself. And, you know, that's basically my attitude. And then I go to the Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, right here in the book, if I can find it right here. And this is what this guy says. This is after he's been sober a few weeks. This is Bill Dodson. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more. You know, I've been here in this place for 31 years, sober for 31 years. And I want to tell you something. From day one, I knew there was even more. When I had 1 year sobriety, I would look up at the podium, I'd look at these guys, I knew there was more. And no matter what I had, no matter where I was, I knew there was more. 5 years sober, I knew there was more. 10 years sober, I knew there was something I hadn't got. 15 years sober, I knew there was something. 20 years sober, I knew there was something. I'm 31 years sober, I know there's something I haven't got. I surround myself with people that have the stuff. I don't even know what it is, but I know I don't have it. I know there's more. I know there's more. I want more. I'm not satisfied with what I got. I want more. I mean, I'm grateful what I have. I bless God for what I have, but I know there's more. I know I can get closer to Him. It says right here, I noticed that others seemed to have such a release of happiness as something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing. And he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the A program for me. This guy went up on to have an incredible life. He got it when he was like 3 weeks sober by listening to that deal. And some people will go in AA for the next 20, 25 years and die not even hearing anything like that or thinking it's a joke. I don't know how long it's going to be for you or whether you're ever going to get it. All I know is I just carry my message, what my story is. You know, I was never a religious kid, a Jewish kid from New York. I'm never a religious kid. You know, I'm not, you know, I mean, I worship Playboy magazine. Hugh Hefner, you know, everything, you know, that's, I'm an alcoholic. Fast cards, fast women, drugs, rock and roll. And so I come in here and they tell me, you know, I must get rid of the selfishness. I must, or it kills me. That's the nature of my disease, that the drinking is just the symptom of the disease. My drinking is a symptom of a disease that basically says I am in a constant state of dis-ease unless I'm throwing some pill, smoking some dope, or putting something in my body that makes me feel like a something, because I basically feel like I'm a nothing. I'm not good enough. I'm a nothing. I've always been a nothing. I'm always going to be a nothing. It doesn't matter how many things I got. I'm always scared. I'm always worried. I'm always anxious. I'm never going to be anything but a nothing. I put some scotch in my body. It turns me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. I will drink myself silly and flush wives down the toilet just to be an almost. And to hang out with other almost that tell me that they like me, that I'm okay. Because they're the only ones that understand me. You know, the other people make me nervous. And so then it tells me, it says, what's the first thing? It says, first thing. We had to quit playing God. You know, it's a funny thing about alcoholics. You know how they don't want to worship God, they don't want to talk about God, that God thing, the God thing, and they don't even realize alcoholics are the greatest worshipers in the world. It's not that they don't want to worship God, it's just that they don't want to give up the throne. They're God. I'm God. Don't you understand? Why should I worship God? But God, I'm God. I'm never going to die. I'm always going to live. Everything should go my way. I know what's best for everybody. I've got to always be in control. And I worship myself. How do I know? You worship whatever you think about the most. And all I think about is me. It's like that movie Bitches. Well, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? And all I do is think about me. It's my favorite activity. How do I think about me? Because I worship my feelings. Don't you understand? My feelings are more important than anything else. That's all I think about. All I think about is how I feel. Why do I feel this way? Why do I feel that way? What do I feel? What's behind what I feel? Why don't I feel better? How can I make myself feel better? Maybe I can see, 15 psychiatrists in a pickle and make myself feel, maybe I take a pill and feel better. All I want to talk about, all I want to think about, the only thing that's important to me is my feelings. Yeah, I killed those 15 people and raped that dog. But, they shouldn't have made me feel that way. You know what I mean? They made me angry. You know, everything is justified because I felt bad. No, I didn't get the milk for the baby. But, listen, I was depressed. You know, I didn't feel good. It's all about me and my feelings. And what's really sad? What's really sad is people just don't understand me. And they don't appreciate my feelings, you know? If they would only understand me and understand how I feel, you know, then I would be okay. So no wonder I drink. And you know when I drink, you know what's great about drinking? You can really feel your feelings when you're drinking. As a matter of fact, maybe you'll play that song, Feelings. You know what I mean? Another great ditty. You know, and that's what I, and that's my deal. And you know what the problem is with this disease that we have, this disease that I have, is it goes on and it continues. You're never cured of it. You know how fast the ego can come back again for an alcoholic? You know, I wish I could say, you know, listen, I'm a recovered alcoholic in the sense that, just like they said, I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. You know, but I am recovering from disease. I have to constantly be on guard and recovering from the disease of alcoholism. The hopeless state of mind and body is the state of mind and body I had, which was, and you all know about this mind and body, I need a drink. You know, I mean, I remember, and I'm sure you do too, what it was like when you couldn't stop drinking. I mean, listen, there's somewhat of a difference in degree between the person who's biting their nails all the time and worried all the time and in fear all the time and having emotional problems and spiritual problems that alcoholics have and the I need a drink problem. I mean, I remember the I need a drink problem where I had to keep on drinking and drinking and I couldn't stop drinking. You know, I'm recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body where I couldn't envision life without drinking. I'm recovered from that obsession. I'm recovered from the drinking. But the rest of the alcoholism, you know, the thing they talk about, which goes deeper about my perceptions about myself and other people that play in my all the time, I'm recovering from that. It's getting better and better. And it better be recovering because you want to some that committee. I'm not talking about the committee that you know about, that you think, you know, that 50 people, you know, those 15,000 voices in your brain all talking about you. You know, don't worry about that committee. That committee's not a problem. Never worry about the committee that invites you to the meetings. You know, that, you know, you at least you're hearing them. You need to worry about that committee that's meeting in secret, the executive committee, that causes you to do all sorts of crazy actions and 6 months down the road you're saying, I don't understand, why did I marry this girl in the first place? You know, I mean, you're just doing stuff and you don't even know why you do it. And not listening to people that you should be listening to and listening to people that you shouldn't be listening to. You know, and rejecting advice and closing yourself. And it says, first, and so I have to start learning what this disease looks like. And it looks like, now this is a terrible thing, and the things I have to give up, resentments, well, that has to do with my feelings. That's important. You know, feeling sorry for myself. What do you mean? I have a God-given right to feel sorry. You'd feel sorry for yourself, too, if it happened to you. You know, I didn't think that, what do you mean? You know, don't you understand I have cancer? What do you mean I can't feel? I mean, to me, it's logical. You have cancer, you feel sorry for yourself. One day you run into a group like this, you run into a man who has cancer, and he's helping other people, and he doesn't feel sorry for himself at all. And you're looking at that guy, and you say, how does he do it? It's like he's walking on water. You run into a guy that's, you know, you say, well, he must have $1 million in the bank. Look at all the people he's helping, and look at how he's trying to, and you find out that he's lost his job, and his house was foreclosed on, and yet he's not even worried, he's just trying, and you say, you run into people where you see this stuff operating in the flesh, you say, how does he do that? You run into live people that are living their life and helping other people and experiencing all sorts of problems. You don't know about it because they're not thumb-sucking crybabies. They're not whining. And, you know, that's my God-given right to whine. When's the next discussion meeting? I got shit I got to talk about. I got stuff I got to get off my mind. Anybody got a burning? Who invented that burning desire shit anyway? You have a nice meeting. Anybody have a burning desire? Yeah, I got all sorts of problems. You know what I mean? Please, you know, forget that deal, you know. I'm terrible. I know I'm hardcore. It's a horrible deal. But hey, listen, I know about alcoholics. I know about alcoholism. I know about enabling alcoholics to feel sorry for themselves and patting them on the back when they're feeling sorry. And all I know about that deal. This is a time to be soft and this is a time to kick them in the ass and say, why don't you grow the flip up? Why don't you grow up or go out and have a drink? You know, I mean, what's the big deal? The worst that happens, they'll drink and they'll die. I mean, we're about as common as dirt. What do you think? We're like something special? We're the guys that run over people and kill them. Nothing special about us. You know, there's something special about somebody that really wants this deal. Special about those people. Not special about people that don't want this deal and just want to, you know, pollute the rooms. You know, just looking for another bar where they drink coffee. You know, just looking for one of those deals. Especially about people that join into the fellowship of the Spirit that really want this deal. They're special people, you know. So the bottom line is, it says, first of all, we had to quit playing God. So how do you quit playing? That's what it says. We had to quit playing. Well, you quit playing God by you quit feeling sorry for yourself. You quit thinking about your feelings all the time. You think quit thinking about you all the time. You think about other things. And what do you think about? You think about other people and how you can help other people. You know, because you start modeling yourself after God, because God thinks about you and other people all the time. And it says right here, what does it say? And there is a solution. You start doing that stuff. It says, we have found much of heaven. We've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences. This is the great fact. This is the great fact. This isn't even the fact. This is like the great fact. This is, you got a big book here. This is a big book. You say, well, okay, what's the point? Get to the bottom point. He says, okay, here, you want the great fact? The great fact. Would you like the great fact? Yeah, what's the great fact? Well, the great fact is just this and nothing less, which means, you ready? Nothing less than this. It's not less than this. This is the great fact. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty, not maybe if, the certainty that our Creator, with a capital C, not the palm tree, unless you're... Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. That's the great fact. That's what this book is all about. You can do-si-do all around this thing and make believe it doesn't say that stuff about God and listen to the wisdom of the rooms that say do it your way and everything like that, but that's the great fact. That was the great fact for Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. That was the great fact for Bill Wilson when they were studying the Bible for the first 4 years. Listen, everything they did between 1935 and 1939 counted. It counted big time, which is why they said, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. This is what we did. It doesn't matter. You don't have to like it. Who cares whether you like it? Who cares about your feelings? Who cares whether or not you feel like it's okay or you feel like it's good? Who gives a crap about your feelings? Your feelings are the feelings that make you walk out on people, be disingenuous, lack integrity, break marriages, cheat on your spouses, hurt yourself. Your feelings flush those suckers down the toilet. They're the reason you're in here, because you worship your feelings. Why not instead of the feelings, how about this, obedience? How about reading what the book says and doing it? And not worrying about how you feel about me or anybody else. How about doing this thing? How about looking at this book and seeing what it really says and what they're really talking about? How about going to the part where it says if we sincerely took this position, all sorts of remarkable things happen? Being all powerful, God will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. How about reading what they're saying? See to it your relationship with him is right. You know, job or no job, wife or no wife, it's not about that. It's all about cleaning the house and trusting God. It's all about your relationship. How about that? How about the part in the book where it says we encourage church membership? You ever hear about that, talked about at meetings? No. You know why? Because it makes alcoholics feel uncomfortable. Who gives a shit? Really? Do you want to grow up? Do you want this stuff? Or you just want to have to worry about whether somebody in the room thinks you're cool or doesn't like you? I mean, really, is that the sobriety you want? Where you're worried? That's what you want? You got that already. But listen, if you want to just sit around life worrying about what other people think about you, don't worry about going to AA meetings, because you already got that shit. You already got that nailed. Trust me, with or without AA meetings, all you do is think about what other people think about you. Because you're alcoholics, because that's what you do. Now, you know, unless you want to break free of that bondage, and instead of worrying about what alcoholics think about you, worry about your relationship with God and what you think about yourself. Then you can be you, and you don't have to worry about whether, you know, so-and-so likes you or such-and-such likes you or whether you're accepted or the room will laugh at you. You don't have to worry about that stuff. You can even get up on the podium and talk fast. You can do all sorts of crap. You'd be surprised. It's amazing what could happen to your life. You can do this stuff. You really can. There are people that do this crap. You know, they believe in this stuff because it works for them. And once they believe it, you know, what does it say? Build it and they will come. They believe it. It happens. They do this crap. Guys tap them on the shoulder. They say, have you ever been to a Bible study? It says, you know what it says in this book? It says, after you've been sober for a while, you ought to join a church or a synagogue. He says, we're not forcing you. God forbid, you know how they talk. It's alky talk. They say things like, well, we suggest. Or it's a, you know what it says when it says the church membership? This is what it says. It says, we encourage church membership. You don't have to do this, but most of us are in favor of it. I want you to get the idea. I want you to get this. You got 100 members of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 100 members. They say, we've been rocking in the fourth dimension because we're doing this. So they say, we encourage church membership. This is exactly what they put. Now, you don't have to do it, but most of us are in favor of it. Okay, well, is there a guy that doesn't like that? Yeah, Poncho in the corner, the guy sucking his thumb, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm going to go with him, you know what I mean? I'll take his deal, you know? No, we're looking for the loopholes. We're looking for the easier, softer way. Listen, about 10 miles, 15 miles south of here, there was a pharmacist that was arrested, went to prison, because what he was doing is he was watering down the chemotherapy medicine. What do they call chemotherapy? What do they call that stuff?
Chemo.
Okay, so that's why it's good to have professionals here, you know what I mean? I'm wearing that chemo medicine. And what happened was people were dying because apparently, even though we're getting the medicine, unless you get the proper dosage, you know, you die. So people were dying because he was watering down the medicine in order to make, you ready for this? Money, because it was expensive. And they indicted him and he went to jail and, you know, a few people died. And that's, I don't want to water down the chemo. I don't want to water down. I don't want to water this book down. By saying stuff that you're going to like, you know what I mean? And say, boy, wasn't that guy fun to be another AA comedian where we can all laugh and have a good time? I want you to think about this stuff. And you know something? Check me out. Check me out with this book. Read this book. Read Dr. Bod and the Good Old Timers. You know, listen. Read and say, well, he was telling us a lie. None of this is true. You know, half the time I have people come up to me and say, I really like what you said and everything like that. When you said this, that, you say, I say, you mean when I read it from the big book? You mean when I read it from, you know, I'm reading stuff they've never heard before because they've never read it. Their idea of what AA is what 100 drunks talk about in the room during a discussion meeting. And that's not AA. That's that, you know what that is? That's the problem. That's not the solution. That's group therapy. You know, that's a bunch of crazy alcoholics talking to each other, and every once in a while you'll get a guy who'll maybe say something like this, and I'll say, don't listen to that guy. You don't have to do that. You do it your way. This is the deal. This is our basic text. This is what we agree with. You know, so one day I was 15, I was 11 days sober, 11 years sober, whatever. Some guy taps me on the shoulder. He says, because I'm talking about this stuff and I'm being sucked into this stuff and I'm reading the Sermon on the Mount and I'm doing all sorts of stuff. And he says, you ever do a Bible study? I said, no. He says, you ought to go to my Bible study. You'd like it over at All Color Presbyterian, you know. I'm Jewish. I don't think Jews study the Bible or pray or anything. I'm not sure. I have to check with my Aunt Joan, but I think she's dead, you know. And I'm sure all my forefathers would roll in their graves, you know. Even though I don't even know what the Torah says or any of that stuff, you know. And I got by this when I was 13. Rabbi put his arm around me and said, I hope I see you back in the temple. And I said, right, Rabbi. You know, show me to the party where the girls and the booze is, you know, and those shrimps and those, those ice things, you know, those ice sculptures, you know, and that was the last time I saw that deal, you know, because I was out there worshiping my feelings and cars and shit, you know. And so this guy taps me on the shoulder, but, you know, I had enough sobriety at 11 years or whatever it is to know that being scared, because that's what it really was. It was about, you know what it was? It was, what will they think about me? It was the classic alcoholic filter, you know. You know, most people say, well, will this help me? I don't know what most people say, because I think even normal people are about as crazy as we are. You know, they just don't. But I think extraordinary people sort of say, well, maybe I ought to investigate this. Maybe I ought to, you know, second step it, you know. Maybe I ought to open my mind, you know, or maybe I ought to, you know, have an open mind about this stuff. Or maybe I ought to investigate this stuff, you know, the big book's talking about. That's what probably normal people do. And you go through, will this hurt me? Is it a bad thing? Is it worth investigating? Can I do it? You know, everything like that. And maybe way, way down there on the list is something like, what will my wife think? Or, you know, what will other people think about? Or what will they think about me down at the 101 Club? You know, or something like that. You know, modeling your life and what you do against what you think the group conscious will be at the 101 Club. You know what I mean? And, you know, I started thinking, well, what will they think and what will they do if I do this, if I wear that and everything. And I reached a point in my life where I realized that, you know, not doing something that's basically reasonable and talk about it in the book and all, it, out of fear is probably not a good reason. So I said, okay, I'll go down there. And I went down there. He was one of those Eskimos in my life, one of those guys that show up and they tell you something, you change your life, you change your direction. Because, you know, if you keep on walking in the direction you're walking, you're gonna get exactly where you're headed. You're going to wind up where you're headed. Only if you change your direction. And the only way we change our directions, because we're so stubborn, is because something bad happens or somebody suggests something to us. And so I went to this Bible study. They were studying the Bible. They might as well have been studying the big book. I understood every word they were saying. I didn't study maybe not all the jargon, but I understood a lot of stuff because the principles they were studying, they were studying everything. Apparently, the guys that wrote the Bible stole everything from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. No, I'm serious. I'm not kidding about this. It was all there. It's amazing. It's all there. It's like in Proverbs and it's like in Psalms. It's like all there. It's unbelievable. And if you read some of the stories, they had drunks back there. They had crazy people. David was sleeping in Bathsheba. God didn't like that. You know, he took his inventory. People were being punished. There was all sorts of crap. I thought it was a story about a lot of good people. It was a story about a lot of wackos. You know what I mean? They were crazy back then, you know? We started talking about the church in Corinth. I didn't even want to go into that deal, you know? The guy sleeping with his father's wife or something, you know, whatever. And then you started how God intervenes in a man's life. And then I started learning about this stuff. I started getting more. I met my sponsor, 52 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, a Baptist preacher. You know what I mean? You know where he took me to? You know what happened when I started watching and hanging around him? We'd go to a Burger King or something like that. We'd sit down and I'd go to eat and say, hey, Russ, you know, we got to pray for it. So you got to give us that. He says, and we'd pray. He'd pray. You know, at first I felt a little unusual. He says, now the food will taste better because it has that added ingredient. And now I do it all the time with my guys and everything like that. Do you know what it's like to be? And I go to Bible studies. I go to all this stuff. All of which is encouraged, by the way, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to do it. I'm just telling you it's encouraged in the book. But you know what it's like to hang around with people, non-alcoholics and alcoholics, who are all on the same page on that deal and want to get closer to God? It's a powerful thing. It's powerful to be in an AA room, you know? Even though half the people are saying, I don't want to hear that crap. It's really powerful when you're on that page, that 11-step page, and you want more of this. Because you know there's even more. Something you haven't got, and you're hanging around 10, 15, 20 people, and not embarrassed, and they're not ashamed to talk about God, and they pray to God, and you know something? You have a problem, they say, let's all pray for Russell. Do you know what it's like to be in a meeting where you have 10, 15, 20 guys all praying for you? Laying hands on you and praying for you? No, you don't know that unless you go to the church, because they don't do that in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it makes people uncomfortable. So you get to hang out here and pick up your medallion for being sober. I think it's great. I think it's great to pick up your medallion. But wouldn't you want the rock chip ride instead? I mean, you know, if you're an alcoholic like me, you really want the real high. Don't you want the real deal? Or you just want like the ersatz? Don't you want the genuine article? The thing that these guys were... I mean, if you read what was going on with these guys and what they're talking about, they weren't talking about going to discussion meetings and hanging in there. Did you read this book? They're not talking about going to discussion meetings and hanging in there one day at a time. They're talking about a total transformation. They're talking about promises. God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. We lose all fear of people and of economic insecurity. No matter how far down we go, that's what they're talking about here. You guys are like nibbling around the edges of this thing and scared to jump in the water. Because you're scared that the buddy sitting next to you is going to look at you funny. What is that all about? That's like pathetic. That's why Dr. Bob in his thing, I'm not quoting, he says, if you're an agnostic or an atheist of any other intellectual pride that keeps you from this thing, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father, they laid it on the line. They laid it on the line. That's your life. Listen, you know, this ain't a dress rehearsal, buddy, you know. You're going to get to go until you're 60, 70, 80 years old. If you don't die, you'll be on your deathbed. And you know, yeah, I mean, that's going to be the saddest thing, saying I could have done it differently. I could have done this thing differently. Why didn't I? Because I was scared. You know, it's not because I didn't know about it. I had guys put it in my face and all that stuff. There's plenty of guys around here you can tap on the... We'll tap you on the shoulder and say, why don't you go here? Why don't you go there? You know? You know, and I'll tell you, and I'm going to leave this. This is the bottom line in this deal. Because I always like to... Sometimes when I talk about the 11th step, I like to talk about inspirational thinking. Because they talk about that. Because it does happen. It says we come to rely on it. Because the closer you get to God, the more you get involved in inspirational thinking. Inspirational thinking is that thinking where you think, where you do things and you perform things and your mind works without thinking. And everybody in here has had that happen to them, whether you know it or not. It's when you when you're confronted by a situation that used to baffle you or drive you crazy, or a mother or a person or something, and without even thinking, you say or do the perfect thing. The perfect thing. And there's no thought involved. And then you run to your sponsor, your AA meeting, and you say, you wouldn't believe what just happened, because you're even astounded. This happened and that happened, and the cops stopped me, and the, my mother called me and everything, and I didn't, and usually I would yell, and I would scream, and I would do this, and you know, I just said, well, that's okay, and I hung up on it, and it was like perfect. And you know, then you say something like this, and you know, that's not me. Well, of course it's not you. If it was you, of course it's not you. It's him. It's him. And it happens once in a while, and it blows your mind. Imagine living your life with that type of thinking all the time. That's inspirational thinking. That's what happens as you draw closer to him. Because he's not, you're not doing the thinking anymore, because he's in control. Because you've allowed him to have control. You don't have to, because you've quit playing God. And the one thing about quitting playing God, which is, I think, probably one of the most important things, is Dr. Tebow talked about this, ego inflation and death, in depth. Alcoholism, the way I understand, the way it happens in my life, and the way I see it happens to other people, and the way our big book talks about it, and I wanted to read a quote, actually, from Alcoholics Anonymous Comes at Age, but, you know,